Bring out the goddess, because she exists there, deep inside of you, even if you don't dare to recognize her. I have lived many lives on earth. In one of them I was the Virgin Mary, when I in human form gave birth to my brother Sananda for the necessary deed he had taken on. That's when I became the mother, before that I was only the sister and the jewel. But I was also in Inanna with the Sumerians and Isis with the Egyptians. My last performance on earth was as Joan of Arc, the brave woman warrior in France. There I revealed another aspect, the woman as warrior. In the beginning there were only 7 Elohim, but now there are many of them. They don't work very much with planet Earth, except that they take part in the Galactic Council, which usually is assembled on the central sun day. The central sun has been situated on Sirius for a long time. From an earthly scientific point of view, this star is absolutely uninhabitable and consists only of gas fields. The reader must in this context accept the fact that when the human eye gets cosmic functions and is adapted to new dimensions, the whole reality you think you live in changes. Many spiritually active humans claim that they have visited the central sun. The physical human body would immediately burn up there, but if somebody leaves his body to visit other dimensions, he or she may be programmed in different ways. Everyone knows about the silver cord, usually called the dock leash. By January it reaches far, but not so far that the owner is allowed to visit such place as the central sun or Shambhala. It actually does not reach into the ethereal world, even if it is said so. If you investigate near-death experiences, you will notice that nobody gets further than the light or possibly the Akashic records in the no-man's world. However, people who receive serious messages from the ethereal world may come to certain domains that are monitored by the realms of angels and masters. If you tear yourself from the silver cord and run away, you must stay on this side. But that seldom happens. When somebody claims to have met the masters in Shambhala or on the central sun, they probably have got the names wrong for these places. Not even I have gained access to the great secrets. So far, Halia, on several occasions I have told you how vast it is here. I can only tell you my personal experiences after my crossing. I don't say definitely and dogmatically, this is how it is. There are endless variations. Hence, I ask the reader again to take in what feels right and true when I continue to tell you about the Elohim and the Seraphim. Elohim are light beings beyond our conceptual realm. Halia informed me that they have assembled a great many highly developed beings and angels in their realm. Those angels who have joined the Elohim have chosen voluntarily to work in large groups with the entire cosmos. When I think of the name Elohim, I have this vision, gigantic, unlimited, undefinable, and made of light in different forms. When I asked her if the realm of the Elohim resembles the ethereal world, she just smiled and shook her head. Everything is light, she said, but it is organized light. There is an incredible order in their world. It is not divided into realms, as here. I cannot describe landscapes or buildings resembling those that exist here. Yet the Elohim are in contact with the whole universe, and their galactic network is equipped with contact rays and communication rays too advanced even for us. The only beings I can tell you about who are a bit more sturdy are the cherubs, the cherubim. They exist both there and in the angelic realm. The cherubs in the angelic realm are a playful group, who make their way in skies of love and joy. With the Elohim, these same cherubs are messengers, designers, and connectors. They connect everything that needs connection, fellowship, and unity. They get around like glittering breaths of air, managing the energies and righting wrongs. Errors can actually happen up here, too. I was thinking of all the errors I have made and gave her a nod of assent. On Earth, we usually talk about the human factor. Here I guess we might call it the unexpected factor. You don't expect any errors, neither in the astral world nor the ethereal, nor by the Elohim. But as long as there are thinking brains, there can be a certain overheating or flashover. It does not happen often, but it occurs. Let us imagine that the Elohim's world rises over all the others like a giant fountain in a firework display of color and tone. The word tone provides a connection to the next world, the world of the seraphim. An opportunity to ask Master Sananda questions. What else than tones can exist closest to the Great Spirit, surround his world of rays, and with sounds of wonderful beauty announce his sun world? I wondered. When we are talking about the seraphs, the seraphim, we are at the same time talking about the Mother Father, Sananda answered. To make it easier for you, I'll demonstrate with a metaphor. Imagine a star with many points. In the center is the Great Spirit, and the seraphim are the points all around. The seraphim are the outermost points of the Great Spirit's will. They forward his wishes and laws, and it always happens through tones, sounds, and music. The tone was the first sound in a quiet and empty universe. The tone is a creative power, as well as the thought. But even the tone must be controlled. The Great Spirit controls the seraphim, and they ring out his message to all of his worlds. Can the Great Spirit or God show himself in person? I ventured to ask. Has he any form or shape? Yes, Sananda answered. He is the creator. Why would he not be able to create a shape for himself, when needed? Who is God? So many people have asked that question. What do you think? If I'm bold, I answered, I believe God is a very versatile being. He must be, in order to be able to survey his creation. I believe that God's eye is in the wind and in all of nature and in our own hearts. I believe he is to be found everywhere where he is loved. I believe he laments for those who hate him or who don't want to accept him, as much as he mourns for those who make war in his name, because he is love. I believe he is the keeper and center of the wholeness. His radiant power is to be found everywhere and in everyone. Then it's up to all of us, both the physical and the non-physical ones, to meet his power with our own and say, "My will is your will." Only then our soul will rejoice, because then it will gain access to the divine tones, and then we will let go of our own will, which has kept us imprisoned in its iron grip all along. Sananda gave me a warm smile and took my hand. You are so right, Jan, he said. The Father can take any shape he wants to. He is usually always part of the Galactic Council. But he is also exactly the one you describe, a permanent center for the universal love in the wholeness. Let us be content with that. We know he is not a stranger who stands high above us, he is one of us when we so wish, and when he finds it is right. He accepts our prayers and wishes, and he answers when we talk to him, if he thinks we need an answer. For the one who places his absolute trust in him, he is a rock. What more can I say? The severe judge and bloodthirsty despot who is called God or Lord in the Old Testament, I believe never existed, I thoughtfully answered. Or did he? Yes, he is a very tangible power from a world I don't want to call good, was the answer I received, and his name is Godonda. But there is one thing I would like to know, Master, I asked. How can you reveal yourself to people in different places at the same time? Is that also accomplished by the power of thought? In a way, my friend, he answered. I will be more plain. Quite rightly, it is all about projection. I have the gift of projecting myself in different places at the same time. Thus I am here, in the ethereal world. My projection goes out from my aura in the form of a kind of hologram, but not exactly what you call a hologram. If I call it a thinking hologram, how do you interpret that? It's unthinkable, I exclaimed. Sananda laughed. You see, he said. Still there remains a great deal of earthly conceptions in January, but the unthinkable can be highly thinkable and thinking, I can assure you. It is even a speaking hologram that I send out. Impulses from my brain go out into the holograms, which make a show of being shapes in compact form, but which are completely dissolvable. When I have finished my errand, I dissolve the projection with the power of thought. It's a miracle for humans, but for me it is only a technical know-how. I already knew about it when I was Jesus. So at that time you were a hologram? Certainly not. I let myself be born to a woman, so I was completely substantial. But already as a child I had this knowledge embedded in my brain, And there was an open channel to my mother father in heaven. I called it heaven because it was impossible to explain all the different worlds in the cosmos to the superstitious humans of that time. Right now you are talking to the core of Sananda. We call the original monad individual the core, which makes it easier for you to understand. Then what am I? A spirit. You belong to the angelic world, and you are one of them? You know that. Your present reality is just as real as when you lived on Earth. But here your life firstly is eternal, secondly it has a much wider perspective, and thirdly you are still you. Your ambition to be included among the masters means a novitiate of about 1,000 years in Earth time. Are you frightened by this? It may take as many thousands of years as it likes, I happily answered. I'm prepared to be tried again and again. My soul group infuses courage and patience into me every time I meet them, which is often. We are now becoming a team who do not wish to incarnate again. We are closely united and share everything with each other. But be aware that it will be a long time before you are ready for a thinking hologram, Sananda warned. We are a special group who learned that magic art from our great teacher Melchizedek, the master over the masters. His name has been used in many contexts on Earth, but it does not really matter, because he has many other names. He was the ruler on Zio when the planet was hit by the comet and on Atlantis, long before its fall. These days he also belongs to the Galactic Council, and he is the one of us who totally masters the difficult art of projection. He can probably be in 20 places at the same time and appear to be totally physical, but his core being is in the world of the Elohim. Does he belong to the Nine Elders? I asked, curious. Even if he was, I am not allowed to tell you, Sananda answered cryptically. Many refer to the Masters as their hierarchy. We are not particularly happy about that expression, since we are servants of the world. We are cosmic servants, we serve the Great Spirit and His closest counsel, which is of great holiness. That sounds very complicated to my ears, almost religious, I objected. How do you want it to sound when you are talking about the Creator and His creation? Asked Sananda, smiling. Reverence and humility are virtues that you still lack, dear friend. Do not protest, I don't mean it as criticism, it's just a friendly pat on your shoulder. Your curiosity is good, your appetite for discovery even better, and we don't take your disrespect seriously. A fair criticism clears away the exaggerations. But now it's time to send you off on a new adventure. One cannot just get facts by talking, one needs to experience them. There is another thing I would like to know before we part, I hurried to say. What is one to believe in all this talk of ascension to the fifth dimension? The word ascension is perhaps a little deceptive, said the one who really should know the answer to my question, with a smile. It sounds as if Earth would be shot up into the cosmos like a rocket and all the environment suddenly would be transformed into perfect harmony and beauty. Humans would, as fast as I am waving my hand, turn into angelic beings. All violence, all evil, wars, bad sudden death in all forms, drugs, gene manipulations, and environmental destruction, in short, everything that makes money, would disappear in a jiffy. Not even I, who was once crucified because of humans' lack of faith, believe in something like that. Oh no, to change the world takes longer than that. It will certainly be changed. The plan is that it shall be transformed, together with its inhabitants, but that change will not be without pain. And please tell me, Jan, what would the humans learn from such a swift transformation? Earth is their school. And no school allows its pupils to graduate without an examination. It must not be that easy, because then the deepest meaning of it all would be lost. Ascension includes not only the Earth, I objected. Before that the humans, according to modern prophets, will be taken up in crafts to enormous motherships, where you and others reside. Up there, they will choose their further destinies or be sent off to some planet which receives and raises the leftovers. Sananda laughed loudly. Now you are exaggerating, he exclaimed. It is not decided beforehand where people, including rascals, will be going. It is a completely individual question. I know all about these uptakings, which are called resurrections by some. From our side, it is a voluntary project. In addition, a certain amount of training is required, or severe shock may result. I certainly do not deny that uptakings already have happened and will happen in the future. Also, group uptakings may occur, but it occurs neither by suicide, as some seem to believe, nor by mass landings of UFOs that sweep huge crowds of people along with them. It occurs through silence, prayer, and certain exercises that mitigate the transition. Some humans have already decided they will be taken up, and they might have wanted it from an early age. We help them, because they are already now standing with one foot on the other side of the border. But they, too, will not come here until they have fulfilled their karma. Many of our sisters and brothers have been sent to Earth to carry out a mission or to finish their own development and, most of all, learn to raise their consciousness in those situations where it is needed. They know it is their last incarnation on Earth, and when they come back here, they are reunited with their work groups or soul groups. Lots of books are written about how these uptakings will occur, including the dates for them. I objected again. As far as I know, no date has been correct yet. Let the universe keep its secrets. Let the present be the leading power of events. Take care of yourself, my friend, and don't ponder any more over the future. Let the humans plan and the creator reign, or perhaps rather direct. A swift embrace and the great master had disappeared. I felt a little dazed, sitting in the big, shimmering angel pyramid where I had a great deal of my lessons. It was like a vast puzzle, but some of the pieces were beginning to fit into place, even though many of them were still missing. Would they ever fall into place? 17. Alien contact. The flying crafts had many different names. They were called Vimanas, Merkabas, and UFOs. It was on a trip with one of those that I experienced the adventure which Sananda had prepared me for. I have been in all worlds, I have visited other planets, I have often on visited my beloved Mother Earth, and I have fully learned to adapt myself to the life I live here and now. I cannot, under any circumstances, call it death, because that word means a cold and stiff nothing, which is placed into the earth or burned in the flames of fire. The inexorable death that man constantly fears does not exist. What's the meaning of the peel you put aside when you eat the fruit? What do your ragged, old clothes mean that are ready for the bin? You don't want to use them anymore, and you don't miss them. You are, in fact, happy to get rid of them, so you can wear the new, lighter garments. Those in your surroundings who were used to seeing you in your old clothes cannot get over the fact that you have thrown them away. It is, in fact, a kind of stinginess from their side. I was thinking along those lines already during my earthly life when I wrote about the old soldier who was so happy when he discovered his recently acquired freedom on the church tower with the rooster. I did not long for death in those days, but I pondered about what it could mean. I did not fear death, as usual, I was curious. I never had an academic education in that life, but there is something called education of the heart. It was deeply rooted in me, because it contains truth, justice, and wisdom. Perhaps that is why I, already from the beginning, did not feel the least foreign in the angelic realm, nor in Shambhala. When my home was on Mother Earth, I was considered rather woolly, especially towards the end, when I openly told people about my belief in an afterlife. I claimed that my earthly life was on loan and that my real home was in higher quarters. Words like this always annoy the learned ones, those who know everything and believe in nothing. Charla, Tsar, and I were sent on a mission. We did not know our destination yet when we sat in the craft that took us to Earth. A fourth person had joined us, a man that I did not know. He belonged to the aliens. He had a big head and big eyes, rudimentary features, a thin body of medium height, and only four fingers on each hand. He was a very kind and pleasant person, and I liked him at once. He was called Moose. He was the main character in this mission. His body was materialized, because he was going to be a link between us and the Earth. With his personality and his appearance, he could become a piece of evidence for the Earthlings that extraterrestrials are not dangerous and that they would like to cooperate with humans. Moose was very knowledgeable. He had resources at his disposal which could rescue Earth from being destroyed by its own people. He was prepared to take up the fight against those gentlemen who govern the Earth, not a bad fight, but the challenge from a love warrior. Just like us, he was invulnerable, but if he was treated badly, we had to return. We would stand invisible at his side. This was a mission concerning top-level politics. Our craft would land in a little place in Canada near a small town where top-level meetings take place. For me, this was new and thrilling, especially as I had not followed current events on Earth since my transition so many years ago. Politics was never my thing, but I could still bring forward a rightful anger against the benefits and self-sufficiency of those in power from Jan, the farm boy. When our craft landed, I stepped down on a foreign part of the Earth with the mission to prevent those catastrophes that possibly waited. Frightened people approached the craft. Moose stood in front of it and put his hands up in a warning gesture. People stopped at once. There were three grown-ups and three children. They obviously knew that the radiation from a UFO can be harmful. Sharla, Zar, and I walked up and looked closer at the frightened humans. A small girl with brown curls reminded me of someone I treasured on Earth, and I sat on my heels next to her and caressed her hair. "Don't be afraid, little one," I whispered in her ear. "We mean you no harm." The girl neither saw nor heard me. Sometimes it is convenient to be invisible. Sometimes it is tough. Our plan was that Moose would try to make contact with those humans, even if they seemed suspicious. He spoke excellent English, and with a friendly smile and outstretched hand he went up to one of the men. There were two men and one woman. He explained that there was a minor technical problem with the craft, which was being repaired. The older of the men remained standing as Moose came close to him, but he did not shake hands. One of the children, a little boy of about 8, darted forward and caught hold of Moose. The alien smiled and lifted the boy up. Then, the boy's father came up and asked if Moose would like to visit their home for a while and talk about where he came from and what had happened to the craft. They lived nearby. Meanwhile, I noticed that the older man stepped aside and used a small black device that he put to his ear. He talked, upset, into thin air. Later I found out that nowadays there are wireless phones on Earth. Moose sat on the ground and talked in a friendly way with the boy and the brown-haired girl. The mother clutched the smallest child tightly in her arms. For a while, nothing happened. Both men talked to Moose, but suddenly sirens whined, and four police cars arrived at top speed. Six policemen emerged from the first one and harshly grasped Moose. He turned around and winked at me before two policemen succeeded in pulling a sack over his head. The others hurried to the place where the craft had been a moment ago. It had disappeared. Sharla started to laugh uncontrollably. "Did you see their faces?" she asked me. But I was worried about my recently acquired friend Moose, so I looked with resignation at the vanishing police car. The policemen in the other cars talked for a while with the man who had sent for them. And after that both the grown-ups and the children went with the police. We remained standing outside our craft, which had become invisible. Hello, readers, this is neither a science fiction story nor an episode of Superman. Crafts can become invisible both in the air and on the ground. It's easier for them to dematerialize than for us. A political world conference gets a cosmic visit. "Now it's our turn to move," Zar commanded. We took each other's hands and closed our eyes. Zar muttered something that took us to a large building in the suburb of the small Canadian town. Invisible, we sat down on a sofa in a room that looked like a waiting room. It was not many minutes before Moose joined us. Meanwhile, a guard had placed himself in front of a big double door in the room. Moose pulled up the collar of his coat and pulled down his hat over his forehead. He walked up to the guard and asked him to open the door. The guard replied that there was a conference going on inside. Then he probably discovered that Moose looked strange and started to grope for his weapon. But he did not manage to get hold of it before Moose put him in a deep sleep. After that, our spaceman stepped into the conference room, closely followed by the three of us. The humans around the long table became silent, and all eyes turned to Moose, who had taken off his hat and coat and was standing there in his glossy space suit. "I greet you," Moose said, in his impeccable English. "I have come here to help you, politicians from many countries, to save the Earth." A man stood up and cried out angrily, "Is this some kind of masquerade? Are you the only bandit, or are there more like you? Where is the guard? Get down, everybody, he might have a firearm." All the others, about 25 people, lay flat on the floor. How ridiculous it looked. I had a hard time keeping from laughing. Fully grown adults that were scared of a small, friendly alien. "I assure you that I come from outer space," Moose shouted, holding up his four-fingered hands. "I have come here to help you. I am requesting to participate in this meeting." "It's a conspiracy," somebody cried. "Call the police," someone else cried. While the police thought they had Moose in safekeeping, he had calmly gotten out of jail. He was standing in the flesh in the conference room, and yet no one wanted to believe what he said. "I want to help you to understand how bad things are with your Earth," he went on. "You call yourselves environmentalists, but you are not doing a thing for the environment. Everything that is written is just empty words. Have there been any examinations of the oceans after the nuclear tests? Have you taken samples of the air pollution around the world? Do you regularly check the ozone layer and initiate active changes of the emissions causing it? Can you explain the weather alterations? Have you stopped selling weapons to each other? Have you taken care of the world's drug trafficking problems, or do you consider them a necessary means of extermination? Do you want to eradicate the rising youth? Do you want to starve out parts of the population in developing countries?" In my eagerness to help Moose, I materialized. I heard people talking Swedish from one quarter of the room, and I thought that perhaps I could explain to my compatriots why we were there. I forgot who I was and swiftly changed into the earthly Jan. "Look, there's another one," somebody screamed. "Where did he come from?" "He forgot to take off his nightshirt," some witty fellow cried out in the background. I looked down at myself. I had forgotten to materialize a shirt and a pair of trousers, so there I was in my blue kaftan. What was worse, under it my bare legs and feet were seen, and my toes were splaying out like happy fools on the soft carpet. "Does anybody know if there's a carnival in town?" an elderly man asked. "And how did these odd fellows, to say the least, get in?" "How do you know it's not the FBI?" cried an anxious female voice. Small black phones were swiftly clamped to many ears, but then Moose raised his hand up in the air. The main lights of the conference room went out, as well as all other lighting. He had accomplished a short circuiting of the entire building. Inside, I cheered him on. Sharla whispered to me to immediately dematerialize, since my voice was not to be heard. Behind me, I heard Zaz's quiet chuckle. "We are working more effectively when we are invisible," he assured me, out of the dark. Some people on the bright side had realized that there were candelabras above the great open fireplace, and they were trying to light them, but in vain. Moose put an end to all kinds of lighting, both inside and outside. Those police cars which were on their way to capture their escaped prisoner just stopped. They got no further. Those who tried to get into the building were hindered by an invisible wall. Agitated voices were heard. Moose called for silence and cried out his message loudly and clearly. "I am not dressed up," he assured. "I am Moose, a visitor from another planet in this galaxy. In awe, we see that the Earth destroys not only itself, but the destruction reaches far out into space and strikes at innocent life there also. Invisible workers from an extraterrestrial space fleet are working day and night, trying to limit the contamination and poisoning. I was sent here to inform you of this and ask that Earth answer our appeal. There are still possibilities for you to survive and repair at least some of the damages. We want cooperation.